Hello, everyone. I'm James.
And I'm Jaden.
And welcome to Pacific Sound Radio.
We hope you enjoyed last week's mini episode, Musician's Guide, Building a Band. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, it's available on our website at pacificsoundradio.com. It's also available on our YouTube page, so definitely check it out, Pacific Sound Media. It's a quick and breezy 7-minute listen, and we would love to hear your feedback on what topics we should explore in future installments.
For this episode, we caught up with Smash Boom Pow. Smash Boom Pow are a two-piece pop rock unit helmed by brothers Ulysses and Zane Coppard. Coupling larger-than-life riffage with Ulysses' soaring falsetto vocals, the brothers Coppard have established themselves as an unstoppable creative force, constantly pushing their sound into new and exciting directions.
In the past 5 years, Smash Boom Pow cracked the top 12 list in the 2015 Peak Performance Project, participated in the Converse Rubber Tracks Initiative, and performed alongside other notable Vancouver bands, including We Are the City, the Pack AD, and Drums.
The band recently dropped their latest single, Way Too Much, and are in the midst of writing and recording their next EP to follow up their debut LP, Do You Feel, in 2014, and the Higher Power of Desire EP in 2016. Welcome to Episode 3.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio.
Howdy.
Hey, how are you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good, good.
Can you hear us?
Yes, we can. And we are recording. So before we get started, let's do a quick round of introductions for our listeners. Tell our listeners your name and what you do in the band.
Cool. So we're Smash Boom Pow. My name's Zane. I play drums.
Hey, I'm Ulysses, and I play guitar, and I sing.
Great. Starting off, how would you guys describe your sound?
So we're a rock band. You know, there's a lot of nuances to that in terms of like the way we sound and our influences, but that's kind of the bare bones of it.
I'd say it's constantly evolving. It started a little more straightforward, and I think we're kind of fine-tuning it or kind of finding our sound throughout the way. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've described it to people. I've said it's melodic rock, as in like closer to the Killers or Muse than to like kind of thrashy like bam 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 stuff. Like there's like, you know, definite verses and choruses and bridges and stuff. Like we don't really play, I mean, there's plenty of blues influence for both of us, but we don't have a blues sound. I mean, we used to call it gritty alt pop, but now if you like go on our Instagram, it just says rock band, and I think that's pretty appropriate. Yeah,
cool. And what's your history of playing together? Like, have you guys been working on projects since you were kids?
Pretty much. I mean, I started drumming when I was 8, and right around that time is probably, we started jamming for some White Stripes and maybe some AC/DC,
yeah,
if we're being real. And then, the band kind of took shape in late 2011, or 2012, early 2012. That was when we put out our first music. Yeah,
it took a while for us to actually start doing anything other than just jamming. But
so to put that in context, is about 7 years after we started playing together.
And now, it being 2017, band's been around for 5.5+ years or so in its official form. But yeah, we've been playing in one form or another together for well over a decade.
Yeah.
And has it just been the two of you, or have you worked with other people before Smash Boom Pow was finalized?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of bands. Ulysses had, we both had bands we were in back in the day.
Yeah, we were both in different projects, but I think they're asking if it's always just been the two of us in the band.
In the band, okay, yes. It has been. We had a guy named Tobias Schiff who's recorded our LP and most recent music we've been putting out.
He put out, actually he produced it all.
He produced it and recorded it, engineered it, did it all. And he played bass with us for, I want to say, a year and a half. But we haven't had a bass player for about 2 or 3 years. We have a batch of 5 shows coming up, and we're going to have a bass player for the first time in like 3 years. So we're pretty excited.
Yeah, and we'll see where it goes. But for the time being, it's kind of like a Black Keys situation where, like, they have a bass player, but he's not like the Black Keys. You know, you don't see a picture of the three of them on their album covers or whatever.
Exactly. So it's our band at the end of the day.
Yeah, of course. Does your familial connection create like a unique dynamic in your band? I mean, obviously you guys know each other better than anyone else since you're brothers.
Yeah, like probably. I'm not sure if either of us are super aware of it.
I feel like whenever I play with one other person, they're often like, whoa, shit, you're listening to me. Like, you know, I'm really in tune. And whenever it's just one other person, like, I'm so used to tuning in to somebody, because it's when you're used to playing with just one other person all the time.
Yeah, and I feel like Zane's probably better at that because it belongs to him to get organized with my song ideas and stuff. And, like, I don't know, maybe one of the downsides of being quite creative is it sometimes to be like hard, difficult to be organized. So like I when we were first starting out, I'd screw up song sections all the time and just be like, oh, is that how it goes? I forgot. So I guess you had to pay a lot of attention.
And one thing that you mentioned kind of earlier was that, you know, you describe your sound as similar to, like, say, The Killers and Muse. Are there other bands that have served as a source of inspiration for you guys?
Tons of them. I would say, especially when starting the band, the Strokes were huge mongus for me. I just wanted to sound like Julian Casablancas, and I really got a lot of the rhythmic guitar playing sort of style, incorporated that into my playing, just like that, like, sort of steady ba 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 ba, like right on the beat from them, which I really enjoy, and just the precision of it. It's like not super sloppy.
Funny thing, in 2010 it would have been, our birthdays are a month apart, and Ulysses, okay, so his is in May, and I gave him a couple Strokes albums. We'd never heard them before, and we were driving back from Tofino and listened to them, and, you know, you first are introduced to a band that doesn't always resonate right away. But I listened to it, like, cool, cool, and then, you know, later becomes a huge influence for the creation of the band, which would be 2 years later.
Yeah.
And that same next month, 2010, it's my birthday in June, Ulysses gets me How I Got Over by The Roots, which I was kind of just getting into hip hop at that point, and I never really made the connection that you can have a live drum kit with a hip hop band. So that album, I probably ripped off like every bar somewhere, every little idea and nuance of just like, it's just implanted in my brain.
Yeah. And that kind of like that blend of like straight, like indie rock stuff that I'm really into and the like hip hop beats, I feel like maybe they're not overt or obvious, but, or, you know, they're in there.
The dynamic within.
Yeah, but Zane's got that swing to his beat. Like, it's kind of an unusual blend of influences, but I think, like, you know, it works pretty well. Aside from that, huge fan of the White Stripes, especially their early records. Listen to shit out of those.
And, like, Radiohead's a huge one, for sure.
Radiohead. I mean, the band name came from a song by them, Crooked Vultures. I don't know if you know that band. They're friggin' awesome. It's like,
oh, hell yeah. Of course I do.
There's that song, Nobody Loves Me and Neither Do I. And there's a lyric in there with Smash Boom Pow in it.
We actually recorded an A and a B side with this guy, Tobias, who I randomly met in Sydney, of all places. And, you know, he had a cool accent and dressed cool. Like, damn, he's probably, you know, does something artistic. And so we recorded this A and B side, and we didn't even have a band name yet. And then he was like, yo, what about Smash Room? We were literally planning on putting it out like a couple weeks later, and we didn't have a name, so it kind of just appeared in the atmosphere.
Yeah, and it's a strong name, because, you know, onomatopoeias are always punchy.
Yeah, plus I always wanted to, I'm not sure if I had, like, put it into words clearly, but when you name a band, you're kind of setting the tone for the whole thing, and I didn't want to do something that was so meaningful, like it had like some deep meaning, but was only suggesting it, and we didn't really know what it was supposed to be. I kind of like the sort of blank slate quality of Smash Mouth. It's just like, ooh, energy.
Yeah,
you know, like kind of fun and stuff, but also powerful. Either way you look at it, it could be like a comic book, or it could be just like Rage Against the Machine style energy, like whatever. Another huge influence, Rage, just like those riffs, man.
Like the Mars Volta too.
On the Mars Volta. Mars, yeah. But I like the band name a lot. I think it's kind of like a blank slate in a lot of ways. And yeah, I don't know. Like, we could have had Matchbox 20. That would have been terrible.
So that ties into just kind of touching on inspirations and stuff like that. I got a question for you, Ulysses, and this ties into, you know, you name dropping the Mars Volta. What vocalists inspire your approach? I mean, you rock a very well executed falsetto, which can be challenging to pull off, and you don't hear as often as, say, other vocal styles.
Yeah. Top three: Julian Casablancas, Freddie Mercury, The Weeknd.
It's an interesting combo.
Yeah, The Weeknd improved my singing a lot because I used to drive around and just listen to music and sing along. And in the car, you can be as loud as you want, you can fuck up, and I sung along to his stuff a lot, and I surprised myself by being able to pull some of it off, and I was like, this is good for me. Just like always taken off, like bitten off a bit more than I can chew. And when it comes to singing, like I used to be pretty terrible, really. I mean, the soul was there, the feeling was there, the conviction was there and all that. But I mean, in terms of actually being able to pull off, I remember when I opened my mouth, I used to go hoarse after like a song or two. I used to sing along to David Bowie. I remember Moon Age Daydream. Had a band I was in back in the day, and my voice will go hoarse after like two times. But I think it's just like, you know, pretty much anything else, just repetition and like sort of shooting a little higher than your current skill level, like consistently. And I just love singing, you know, like that's guitar playing's awesome and good at it well enough to support what we do. But like at the end of the day, like I want to sing. So
cool. Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that right away, because when I listen to you guys, I well, like with your vocals, I heard like Brian Molko a bit, if you're familiar with Placebo at all. But
there are a lot of influences, though. I mentioned those three because I've sung along to their stuff a lot, but into the falsetto you mentioned is like pretty much all The Weeknd. Yeah, I've, you know what, so funny, far and away, like by a huge landslide, that's the person I get compared to the most. I've never even really heard a full Placebo song.
I had a similar experience when I was talking to Charlie Kerr from Japanese Girls for an interview a while back. I was saying, hey, Japanese Girls remind me of Incubus, and he's like, dude, I barely listen to Incubus.
They do, though. Incubus is awesome, and they totally have some similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Incubus and, oh man, when you were talking, I thought of another band. There are tons of awesome bands. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry. The Darkness. The Darkness is probably my first introduction to falsetto. You remember that album, Permission to Land? I listened to that like an embarrassing amount of times.
I believe in a thing called love.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Da 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 da. Oh, it's so good.
Bet you kill karaoke on that.
He got that gig. I'm okay. I heard that he got the gig as a singer because they did like drunken karaoke and he rocked Bohemian Rhapsody. Like everybody was surprised, and then they were like, you shouldn't be the lead vocalist.
That's awesome.
So cool. Yeah. So I'm kind of jumping around a little bit here, but I wanted to ask about the song Do You Feel? Was that written as a single piece or was it stitched together? I ask because the track kind of has two distinctive parts that fit together, but they seem contrary.
You mean the ending with all the rockin' power chords?
Yeah, like how the verse and the chorus is like pretty driving, and then the bridge is like, you know, the big walloping bluesy riff.
Right. Yep, that was 100% a single composition. Yeah.
That's like very old. That's a really old song.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers were a massive influence on me, and I think a lot of the, like several of the bands I've mentioned, Chili Peppers, Rage Against the Machine, I mean, The Strokes, The Roots with Zane, like there's some interesting sort of genre blending stuff going on with like a few different, it's not like like a band that's like strictly a blues rock band or et cetera, et cetera. And I've always found that spoke to me, kind of like putting different influences together and seeing what comes out of it. And I think like it's starting to become a bit more refined the way we do that now, just like writing with a purpose and wanting it to sound a certain way. But a girl is probably a really good example of how, you know, things can clash and still kind of sound cool. The falsetto stuff happening in that track was like, at that time, I think that was probably when I was more heavily into listening to The Weeknd and trying to adopt that vocal style. But then also, like, the rock and guitar stuff was, you know, from some of the other bands I was listening to. And, you know, quite a lot of the way that song ended up sounding is due to Tobias's production role, because he really, like, heard something in the composition and turned it into what it was. But what we brought to the table was, yeah, maybe a bit of an odd blend of things, but I think it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say so. Before we continue, let's have a listen to Do You Feel. This song was probably the first Smash Boom Pow song I heard, and I was instantly hooked. The driving rhythm on the verses and choruses, paired with the monstrous guitar riffs on the bridge, had me sold. Things are gonna get loud, ladies and gentlemen. Touching on how you guys have been approaching things just in general, you obviously use synths and bass on your studio recordings, but you use backing tracks when you perform live. Is this done in order to maintain Smash Boom Pow's image as a two-piece? I mean, you mentioned that you're going to be having a bassist on stage for some of your next round of shows, but by and large, I've seen you guys just as the two-piece.
It's a bit of both. I mean, I think it started because we just didn't know anybody who we want to play bass with us, and we're kind of a little lazy, I guess, but also just like, hey, let's try this. We didn't really even think about it that much. We're like, okay, Tobias is out, I guess we're gonna program it. That's what makes sense, right? Like, it wasn't, looking back, it was, we didn't really, you know, it's like, Tobias was the bass player, now what?
I remember having a brief conversation about that. And just like, if we wanted somebody in the band, we wanted them to be like really solid and like the right person who was, you know, like in, totally in. And I don't think we wanted to really mess around with just like having to do, we wanted to try and see what it would be like to have the band stay really simple. So we wouldn't have to deal with, you know, coordinating with another person all the time. And like, I was also interested in learning like some production stuff. So programming the parts just, it seemed like good timing to try and try that out. But I mean, we have done shows since then not using programmed bass, and that's the direction the band is moving. And we want everything to be like a live experience, an organic experience. Yeah, like basically like we're playing with a metronome, and we don't want to do that anymore. Just, it's more fun for us, you know? Yeah, so it just kind of happened. Yeah, I'm really excited to trying out some shows with a guy on the bass guitar.
Yeah.
Sweet. That's really cool. So I've got a quick question for you guys as well. Now, do you feel that the two-piece format lends some more flexibility to how you approach songwriting, music, as well as the performance side and marketing yourselves too?
I think it is easier because, you know, we're brothers, first of all. Like we lived together for, once we moved out of our family home, we continued to live together for like four or five years. And in terms of writing,
also just life stuff
is just easy. You know, you're organizing with another person, and we can always fall back on that too. If we're playing live and a bass player can't make it, or we're like flying somewhere and we don't have the budget, we can just be like, okay, whatever, we'll just do it ourselves. You know, there's always that. In terms of what we both kind of contribute in terms of songwriting, it's quite useful because Ulysses is just an endless fountain of ideas. And I do a lot of structural / creating, you know, create sections out of ideas.
Yeah, Zane's really good with arranging songs. I'll come to him with like 9 sections and be like, I don't know how to, what do I do?
And, you know, it's very complicated. We're just lucky in that sense. And that's why, partly why this dynamic is powerful for music.
Yeah, in terms of marketing, though, it's also pretty, I mean,
just makes things a bit
people
easier.
Seem to like it. They're like, a brother band. What a wonderful novelty. Allow me to tell other people about you.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of have a similar question on that. What's your view on bands that, you know, sell themselves as a two-piece but perform live, like always, with additional touring musicians? I mean, it can be done well, after all, and sometimes it can showcase a band's music in a different light. The example I'd like to use is when I saw Sleigh Bells, if you've heard of them. What on their recordings, it's, you know, overdriven guitars and completely electronic drums. But when I saw them live, it was like 2 electric guitars and acoustic drums. So it was a completely different like setup. So what's your kind of take on that?
You're not making any promises just because you have some sort of image, just because people associate you as these two people. You know, that if you have songs that could use assistance live, like you're not promising people that it's just going to be the two of you.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, Zane, but I kind of feel like with a band like Sleigh Bells, you kind of are making a promise as to how you're going to sound, because like, you mentioned Sleigh Bells, and it's like, yeah, they sound like that. Like, you want that to be the thing. Like, if you went and saw Death from Above live, and it was like an acoustic set without telling you, you'd be like, fuck you, give me my money back.
I kind of misphrased the question in terms of, you're talking about their actual sound is so much different because they have acoustic drums and stuff. I could see that being a little irritating. I don't know what we'd really change.
Yeah, but I think in terms of instrumentation, like the way it's coming across, like, sure. But when it comes to having more people on the stage than fans think are in the band, I think that's kind of par for the course. Like, if people are annoyed at that, like, I don't know, whatever, because like the Black Keys do it. Like, I saw the Killers and there was like an extra guy in the back. I saw Green Day, there was an extra guy in the back. It's like, oh, what is it? It's just kind of like a thing that bands do. And I don't think really, if people do care about it, there's not enough of them that it's like an issue for anybody who is doing it.
We've got another song for you before we move into the second part of our interview. This track is called Friends, and it's probably the catchiest number in Smash Boom Pow's catalog. It's not overly complicated, and that's part of its charm. The guitar and vocal melody conjure a really heartfelt and pining mood that feels timeless and universal. I think you're going to enjoy this one a lot.
You guys have some prior experience in the studio, and you've done an album and recorded an EP and have released this latest single. Was there anything different in the recording process itself?
For each project?
For each project, yeah. Did you guys try something more experimental or kind of stuck with the typical recording and just kind of getting a great song down?
The recording process itself was fairly similar in that we had a super dope producer engineering it, recording it, producing it, like kind of holding our hand, letting us be the artists in the studio, which is, you know, a lot of fun. I mean, for the LP, it was a bit of touch and go. We couldn't be in the same space all the time. We even had like an amp coffin we used in an apartment, and we got noise complaints, and we had to move the shit across town. That was pretty hectic. We made it work. This latest single, similar recording techniques, really. Except we didn't have to move around from place to place and interrupt the creative flow. So that was definitely good news.
And I think an album should be used as sort of a snapshot of where you're at in literally every way. So if that means that your life circumstances means that you have to do half of an album over a longer period, really disjointed and kind of disorganized. I mean, all different kinds of rooms and scenarios at different times. Then you know the reality of your life, and you shouldn't, I don't think shying away from that is giving it true respect, I guess. Say you're in a studio and you have a limited amount of time and you're rushing vocal takes or something, but that's the energy on the album, you know, that's it at the end of the day. You had a limited budget or whatever it was. And it just reflects them on, you know, everything.
Yeah. And as far as recording influencing the creative process. Yeah, it's kind of hard to put a finger on how. I think just like perspective widening and understanding how all the parts fit together. And so you kind of begin with the end in mind a little more. It's a bit less of a process of discovery now, where you're kind of not sure what the next step is and you're just sort of, everything's new. And now it's like, there's a bit more purpose right from the get-go for me when I'm writing. You know, like I've always used writing as kind of like a way to journal my life and like make sense of the world around me. But like, it's not so only that now. Also, it's like, what can I deliver? Like, can I make a tasty treat for people to listen to? And I'm thinking about that from the beginning. So that it's more of an all-in-one process now. I've started, you know, learning music production as well, and so has Zane. So we can discuss what we're doing on many different levels. It's not just like, what do these lyrics mean? It's like, would this be produced if it was, you know, in the production phase, like in the studio and so on and so forth? Like, what kind of mood are we going for?
As opposed to being more passive and being more, I guess, conscious of your choices because you have an experience to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I imagine that's really helpful, just having kind of more of a hands-on approach to every aspect of your music. I had a question because we just started talking about the new single. So with Way Too Much, is that song an indication of what your next release will sound like? I listened back to your first two releases and I noticed that Do You Feel is very hard rock, while Higher Power of Desire is much more poppy, and I found in some respects much more experimental.
Cool.
How did you find it experimental? I'm just curious. Did the song structure speak out to you in any way, like with Higher Power of Desire kind of being oddly long and strange like that? Or?
Listening back to Higher Power of Desire, the song titles escape me, unfortunately, but I recall what listening to, like, I think the first two or three tracks on that, it seemed like the riffs were less prominent. It felt more like, it sounded like you guys were doing something more with rhythm and with some synth ideas, more so than, like, you know, the bigger guitar stuff that I heard on the first LP.
Yeah, it's less guitar-based, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, they're totally different producers on those projects, as well as a more experimental approach from our side.
We were actually in the Peak Performance Project at that time, so there was a bit more of I think things were just a little more structured feeling. It was a little more square, you know, a little more...
Which is interesting, because...
And the first album is a lot more just like, here's some songs that we have, we weren't really thinking that much. It's very raw and organic.
Yeah, and I do kind of like the idea of getting back to that a little bit. I mean, with all the synths that we were using and the way we were putting the vocals way up front with our EP, Higher Power of Desire, it comes across a little more pop, like less guitar focused and a little more careful. I kind of like the messy, raw energy. I like to try and come back to that a little bit. I mean, it's really fun to play that kind of shit live.
Way Too Much kind of encapsulates that energy a bit more. Yeah. But it's the EP that it's a part of it's quite, you know, that's probably the most raw tune on it, but it's a little more, that is a bit, you know, a true teaser of what it will be like.
Yeah. I mean, the overall sound is similar to that. I mean, you might notice that the latest release is a bit, maybe a bit less full sonically. I don't know, like there's no bass in there, for instance, and you don't hear everything being limited to the point where it's like super, super, super loud. And that's cool for now. Like, that's just how this release was done. I mean, in future, going forward, like, we have just as much of an interest in production and writing, as well as, you know, playing shit live. So, like, we'll probably get back to that big, huge sound one day, not too long from now.
Yeah, fair enough. So with Way Too Much, I just want to clarify here, is that going to be part of a new EP or a new album?
New EP.
Okay, and where are you guys at in the process of writing, recording that?
It's done.
Oh, it's done.
Do you have a release date in mind?
Probably next year.
Okay.
To be honest.
Yeah, but we have singles coming out up until then.
Yeah, basically we're trying to put out something every month.
and we have enough material to kind of last. So, you know, we're really, I think it's really important just to keep people's radar with the current state of affairs, you know, for how people consume content. And if you're not a well-known act that have a lot of huge following, then you kind of just have to be in people's face until that does happen.
Yeah, definitely. One of my favorite bands, The War on Drugs, they've, for whatever reason, they've released almost half their new record. They've just been dropping single after single up until like the release of the album this week.
Totally, right? Yeah. You know what? I read today that Buckethead has something like 75 albums.
Oh my God. Gives Frank Zappa a bit of a run for his money then.
Yeah, I guess so.
I wanted to shift gears a little bit here. It'll tie back into Way Too Much, but I wanted to ask about your music videos. Who comes up with the ideas? I've noted that it's interesting that all your videos thus far have been really different in tone and mood. There's kind of the psychedelic fun stuff going on in A Girl. There's the psychological horror angle in the Do You Feel video, and the endearingly goofy bocce ball tournament and Friends. So is that something you guys work on together?
Yeah, it's a bit of all of us. I think the A Girl idea came from me. You know, Ulysses thought of, we wanted to shoot a video for France, and he had this idea of playing a bocce ball game for like, I swear it was 2 years. And then we were like, why don't we just film that? Make it, you know, that's what he thought. But it has a lot to do with the crew that we did it with. They're called Room Collective, and they're from Vancouver. I'm not really sure. They've kind of all doing a lot of their own thing.
Yeah, they haven't been super active as Room Collective. I'm not really sure what the status of that is, but that is the origin story behind it.
It had so much to do with those videos. You know, everything, really. Like, they turned out so well because of them.
Yeah, I'd say, like,
they're a huge part of just our support base.
I'd say, like, the videos are, like, 80% those guys.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, we have input and stuff, but, like, you know, I'd be kidding myself if I said I had very much to do with it, really. Yeah. They're just like all incredibly creative, driven guys. Really, really dope.
Super supportive. And just, it's a good relationship.
Rad. So I guess that was kind of more those guys who came up with the mannequin love story thing in the Do You Feel video.
I actually did find those mannequins in an alleyway behind a cafe I worked at in Vancouver, and I was like, those are mine. And I took them home, and then they took it from there.
Rad. So can we expect a music video for Way Too Much in the near future?
Nothing planned, but there's talks of a different song.
Okay, so potentially your next single or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got one more song to share with you before we get into the last part of our interview with Smash Boom Pow. We're really huge fans of this track, especially the guitar lead and the sing-along chorus. This is the band's latest single, Way Too Much.
Just searching for
In 2016, you toured Western Canada with Soft Alarm. Do you have any plans in the works to tour in 2018?
We're going to be playing to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. And then we're also going to be...
Oh, we'll try and get in the Juno Awards.
You know, we'll just seeing what we can leverage.
Not so class,
in terms of like funding, I suppose, grants and things like that. People we can team up with. So there was a lot of potential on the table, and we just have to keep moving in our upward swing. But we're definitely going to shoot for South by Southwest or The Great Escape, which is in Brighton in May. They're just, you know, two very big showcase festivals. We really are, you know, focusing, really want to build a team around this band because that's how
things
happen.
Yeah, it's kind of just like adding layers over time, like every year, try and do it a little smarter, a little bigger. Because, you know, like, we're not trust fund babies, you know. We can't really fund a huge tour just at a moment's notice. And so it's more about making connections with people and trying to build a circle of influence, I guess, as well as our fans. And, I mean, I'm sure you've heard about this, but, like, in Canada, to tour properly across the whole country is both insanely difficult, long drives, and there's a lot of small towns where not a whole lot is happening in between too. And so we've kind of talked about, you know, not trying to paint by the numbers and play every little place in Canada that we can, but like look into opportunities like playing, you know, festivals around the world. I mean, that's kind of just two of us and not having an elaborate stage set up where we could, you know, conceivably if we got a gig in Berlin, we could just fly over there and do it.
Makes things, you know, easier at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, ties into what you were saying earlier is that it's just so much easier for you guys to plan things when it's just the two of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you guys have planned for the rest of 2017?
I mean, we're playing at Fortune Sound Club on August 31st with Melodramania, Illacuda, and Jonah Ocean. And then playing September 7th in Nanaimo at The Vault, September 8th in Victoria at The Anion, September 9th in Duncan at The Duncan Showroom. And then we're going to be playing at Rifflandia for their BC Music Showcase on September 14th at The Anion as well.
Sweet.
Nice.
We got one more question for you guys before you go. Are there any local bands that you would recommend we bring on to the show as guests?
You mentioned Japanese Girls already.
Yes.
Melodramania, a guy named Connor Head. You find him online there. He's going to be playing with us on all these shows, and he's actually going to be playing bass in our band.
Nice.
Hit him up.
Do you know the band War Baby?
Yeah, I want to try and bring them on too.
Have you heard of Art Deco?
I heard the name. I'm not familiar with them.
Probably the best show I've seen in the past like 8 months. They're so good. They're Vancouver, so hit them up. We have Louise Burns. She's fun to talk to. She is a pro on the air. Girlfriends and Boyfriends.
Yeah.
Any other ideas, Ulysses?
I totally know there's some people I love
you
who I would
up,
be repping, but I'm not coming to mind right now.
Leighton Kramer?
Yeah.
Velveteens, they're from Edmonton, but they might hate you back. Peach Period from Victoria. There's a dude named Tobias Young who's super awesome. He's a R&B singer. And he's only played two shows, but he's just this incredible voice and stage shows. So it's, you know, he's a natural. He just has to play a bunch, which he's doing. And, you know, I don't think he's ever done anything like this, so that could be really fun. He's got a big personality, so he'd have a lot to say.
Yeah, that'd be great, too, because we definitely want to diversify a bit. Thus far, we've just had rock bands on just because that's who has been on our radar the most, but we want, not discriminating on the show, we want to bring on all sorts of bands and acts, so yeah, definitely keep that in mind.
Hit up Tobias Young, man.
Just casting back to a question earlier, I kind of want to like amend something I said. You were asking about, you know, do I think it's cooler when there's the same number of people in the band as you expect there are to be? And like, yeah, I do think it's cooler. Like, if you think of the Strokes, you know who each person in the band is. They belong there. You expect to see them. It's fun. There's kind of a story for each person. Like, of course that's cooler. It's just like, we don't happen to have one of those at the moment. So, we'll see.
Cool. Yeah, well, That's pretty much it, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedules to speak with us. Super rad that we were able to do this considering you guys are over on the island now.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll see you when you're coming over here into Vancouver.
Awesome. Yeah, hit us up.
Yeah, please do.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Take care.
Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can follow Smash Boom Pow on Facebook, on Instagram at All Day Boom Pow, and on their website at www.smashboompow.ca. Special thanks to Unbiased Media Productions and Travis Dean for hosting us at his studio. We could not have done this without him.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can follow us at Pacific Sound Radio on Facebook and on our Instagram at Pacific Sound Radio. For new episodes and additional content, Pacific Sound Radio is available on YouTube and on our website at pacificsoundradio.com.
I'm James Olson.
And I'm Jaden Fraze.
See you next time.